Hey, ding-dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent but curious fella from Toronto, Canada, have the complicated political happenings of the world explained to me by my best friend and political expert, Richard Lamb.
This guy.
That guy.
What's got two thumbs and wants to tell you about stuff.
Richard.
This joke doesn't play as well over audio.
No, but it's funny all the same. Oh, God, my energy's so low. How's it going, buddy?
That's great. I like that. It's a good hosting technique. Really just make yourself relatable to the people.
Just like right off the top, let's bank this boat on the bottom of the ocean.
I'm Jamie, everyone. Life is essentially meaningless, and all of us one day will go to the great dark void in hell.
Yeah, that's why we need to take a break every 11 months.
That's right.
So on this podcast, I get political stuff explained to me. I'm not an expert really in anything, and but I am curious and open and interested, and Richard happens to know quite a bit about politics.
What can I say? I'm one of those dorky guys who just loves to read about financial systems.
Oh boy, oh boy, are we on today, Rick?
I know. Wow, this is the cutting edge banter that our fans know and love.
Yeah.
So, Jamie, what is it you want to learn about today?
Saudi Arabia, baby.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, man, it's been in the news. Obviously, with the murder of the Khashoggi fella,
Jamal Khashoggi.
It's been. I feel like Saudi Arabia has always been relevant, like even like when I was a kid, you know what I mean, like the mysterious Saudi businessmen like walk through the movie and like everyone goes, oh, mysterious, and you know, they seem to be one of those countries that is like a monarchy and nobody minds. You know what I mean, like where like a prince walks in the room, everyone says your majesty, and like everyone acts like that's normal and fine. You know what I mean? They're sort of shrouded in mystery for me. I don't really understand how the country works other than that it's based on oil or anything like that. They've been in the news. I want to know about them.
They're always relevant.
Yeah.
They're going to stay relevant for a long time. Canada's been in a like months-long pissing match with them, which
That's
is
right.
continuing even today.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, it is November the 2nd, which means that we have recorded this episode a little bit in advance, which is why we're taking a topic that's a little more timeless.
Yeah.
So as of even today, Chrystia Freeland, Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs, was tweeting at the Saudis to stop doing terrible things in Yemen. Maybe in 2 weeks, Chrystia Freeland won't be Canada's foreign affairs minister anymore because the Saudis will have strangled her at an embassy and cut all of her arms and legs off with a bone saw.
Sure.
But, you know, maybe not.
Bone saw.
Yeah, that's how we should start this off for sure, is we should do some kooky voices about
that's a callback to Spider-Man 1, if you'll remember, when Peter Parker goes and fights Bonesaw in the wrestling match.
And I'm sure that the memory of Jamal Khashoggi will be gloriously upheld by this tasteful tribute to his memory and his great career in journalism.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I hope no one who knows him is listening. Anyway.
Hey, here's a wacky theme song to create the somber and dignified atmosphere.
Wahoo! Okay, I've learned my lesson. I've calmed down. There will be no more referencing of Spider-Man.
I mean,
Saudi Arabia,
the bone saw is going to get mentioned again, and when that happens,
I have a hard time not saying it seems, even at this moment.
I know, your whole body's like shaking. It's like an alien when the alien, like the words bone saw are threatening to burst out of your body.
We got to move on, buddy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't hold it in.
Jamie, what do you know about Saudi Arabia?
They love the picnic blanket pattern. the oil-based monarchy that everybody seems to sort of, I'm guessing, you know, cowtail to because they're oil rich and and money rich and all that. They're a conservative Muslim country, is that right?
That's correct.
And they just recently had some like advances in like women's rights as far as like driving and stuff. But
yes,
but that's all I know. Yep. It's very conservative, very like Muslim, oil rich country that everybody seems to accept.
This is good though. This is really useful. And in a way, this is like the kind of like mission statement of this podcast is I feel like everyone has kind of heard like women driving, conservative, Muslim, oil, and they have all these like unconnected dots. So let's try to like connect all these dots together.
Well, Richard, I know that you know that I work tirelessly to like appear like the everyman. You know what I mean? And like I do hours and hours of work to like string my ideas together to sort of, you know, really encompass a Joe Schmo's understanding of politics. And it takes everything in my power not to be just like super expert and smart about it.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah.
Don't say bonesaw.
Bonesaw!
You had one job. Okay. So, Saudi Arabia, as you have mentioned correctly, is a kingdom. It's a monarchy. It's a bit old school in that way, in that like, it's not a democracy. It is a friggin'
power is
monarchy.
Given by God. Yeah.
That's right. There is like one family that is in charge of all the shit, and that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. And in the way that their country is structured, there's no way for that family to not be in charge of the shit.
Right.
If you live in Saudi Arabia, you live under the, kind of their laws and rules and whims, and you're cool with that.
Yeah.
And that's the deal.
Sure.
And that's a deal that a lot of people accept, and a lot of people have lived their entire lives under. And, you know, it's a complicated country. There's a lot of interesting shit going on there. And it's really, really a non-Western country. Mm-hmm. It's the only country in the Middle East that was never colonized or westernized, kind of. It's maintained its autonomy through the very, very fraught history of the 20th century, as we've mentioned on past episodes about ISIS and Syria. We've talked a little bit about, you know, how the Middle East was colonized and then just ruthlessly and kind of ignorantly divided up into like completely arbitrary countries, and those lines that were literally drawn like, oh, I'm going to draw a line from like the A in Lebanon to the like to the I in Iran, and that's a country now. You know, like the Sykes-Picot Agreement, all these things we talked about. Saudi Arabia has evaded that.
Right.
And because of that, its kind of ideological beliefs and its basis are quite foreign to us. They're literally is grown up in a different stream than we have. And so kind of getting in the headspace of how the country functions is, I think, a key part of understanding it.
Right.
It's a kingdom. It has a king.
What's the capital city of Saudi Arabia?
Riyadh. Yeah.
Where's Dubai?
Dubai is in the United Arab Emirates,
right,
which is like a neighboring country to Saudi Arabia.
I often, when I think of Saudi Arabia, my brain goes to Dubai.
Yeah, and so Dubai and Saudi Arabia are interesting because they have some similarities in that they're these kind of like new money. We think of them as being extravagant, kind of like weirdly rich places on the Persian Gulf, like in the kind of Arab Crescent.
Yeah.
But Dubai is like a lot more kind of westernized.
I was going to say Dubai and Saudi Arabia, Dubai more so, feels to me like a more progressive Muslim country. And like, like there's still like funny things, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like a man and woman can't hold hands in public if you're not married. And, you know, like stuff like that.
Well, Saudi Arabia has like an official state religion, which is like a really, really fundamentalist sect of Islam called Wahhabism, which is named after a dude who existed in the 17th, the 18th century named
Bahab.
Bahab.
His name was Rahabert.
His last name is Al-Wahhab. People call him Al-Wahhab. Wahhabism's named after him. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, It's interesting because people sometimes say, like, I saw a tweet the other day that was like, Saudi Arabia is like, it's extremely cool that it's like the Westboro Baptist Church has a whole country that it's the king of,
right,
which is like a way into understanding what's happening. But the actual truth is a lot more interesting. And I say interesting, it's like oppressive and very at odds with the foundations of Western society about what we believe is like moral with regards to human life and human existence. But it is like, it's not as stereotypical as I thought it was. Like, these power relationships are really real.
Right.
The thing that the main thing that you need to understand is, like, it's all about the family. Saudi Arabia is named after the Al Saud family, right? That's their last name.
Oh, so, yeah. I didn't know that.
That's like the main thing. That's why it's called that. It used to just be called Arabia.
Oh, whoa.
And now it's called Saudi Arabia. So it's like it's just like you were like took over Alberta and you were like, it's like this is Kavanaugh Alberta now, right? And right. You're like, we're in charge. That's right, like right. Literally what happened.
Wow.
And so all of these And basically,
you got me thinking about Kavanaugh, Alberta.
I know, right?
What would I do?
How sweet would that be? Let's just go back there whenever we need a little fun break from how bleak this topic is going to be. It's not that. It's comparative. The world's terrible. It's, you know, there's bleakness definitely sewn into this topic.
Oh yeah, we're not wont for bleak.
But like going all the way back to the 1700s, when this Al-Wahhab guy was still alive, he was a like conservative. Super conservative, like Muslim leader who believed in this kind of very fundamentalist and pure form of Islam. At the time on the Arabian Peninsula, which is like, you know, in the Middle East between Africa on one side and then like the Persian Gulf on the other side, there's this little like stretch of land where there's Oman and Yemen and the United Arab Emirates and like Bahrain and like all these kind of like small Arab countries.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it should be said, this is the part of the world where people are Arabs,
mm-hmm.
you know, the word gets through, like sometimes people accidentally call Persians Arabs.
Sure.
Arabs are an ethnicity who we find in Iraq. We find them in Syria. They've dispersed, but there are many other ethnic groups in there.
Yeah.
Like the people who come from this specific place in the world, where
these are the Arabs.
This right. is where they're from.
A surefire way to figure out if someone is talking about someone from this area or just generally is if they say Arab.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. At the time on the Arab Peninsula, there was actually, in the 1700s, there's this really kind of like pluralist form of Islam with many different kinds of ethnicities and ethnic groups kind of practicing many different viewpoints and interpretations of Islam, especially like Egyptians were in the Arab part of Islam doing this kind of like much more flamboyant and relaxed kind of Islam. And these were the people who were like, no, we need to like do only the stuff that they did like when Muhammad was the prophet. They took like a really hardline view. I'm not an Islamic scholar. This is all just like my own research from a distance.
Sure.
So I'll say that. But basically, they kind of limited the amount of they drew the rules from what they were supposed to do from only like the stuff Muhammad did and said, and then like 100 or 200 years after that. So that's from like 600, the kind of like 600 AD to like 1000 AD-ish. And then they're like, this is the stuff that we're going to do, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, you know, there were many different, the people were dressing all kinds of different ways and blah, blah, blah. But these were the people who were like, no, you dress exactly like this. This is what's holy. You behave in this manner. And they kind of took a very literalist approach to their interpretation of Islam, which is not necessarily the only approach, obviously, to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, non-literalism is built into a lot of Islam, which is one of the things that makes this so complicated. But at the time, this Al-Wahhab guy was like a religious leader who had all these like warriors on his side who were all following him, trying to like convert people to their cause and kill people who they thought were infidels who didn't believe in them.
Mm-hmm.
And the Saud family was like a family that had kind of like a tribal power like zone, one of many competing kind of like tribal families. And they kind of saw the potential of this dude and his warriors. And they were like, look, we'll convert to your thing and we'll get people to convert to your thing if you fight for us and help us conquer everybody, which they did. That was like the first Saudi kingdom in Arabia. And then they also did.
And when was this?
This was in the 1700s.
1700s. Okay.
Then they did a thing which they also would continue doing throughout history, where once they conquered everyone, they kind of took a turn to the religious warriors and were like, ha, surprise. And then they killed them all. They betrayed them and executed them all once they had the power.
Right, right.
Anyway.
You know what's weird? I'm just going to point out. It's weird, when I hear about stuff like that happened in 1700, I go like, oh, yeah, you know, sure. That's the way it was 300 years ago. They didn't even have the internet or anything, you know. But now, you know, last week we talked about the Brazilian election and, like, Donald Trump and all this stuff and how this is sort of creeping back into normalcy to say and think about today.
Well, and the Saudi kingdom specifically has continued to behave this way well into our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. They've done this exact same thing more than once.
Right.
Anyway.
Example? Bonesaw.
Oh, God. I didn't see it coming. I'm so innocent and naive. I didn't see it coming.
That's right. I have very cleverly disguised that catchphrase 13 times in this podcast.
See if you can listen. If you play it backwards.
Yeah, James. Comment with all the time captures.
It's like The Haunting of Hill House. There's a hidden bonesaw.
Yeah.
Left 14 times already in this episode.
Yeah, if you can count how many times I said bonesaw, put it in the comments and we'll pin it to the top.
Anyway, so the Saudis create the kingdom in the 1700s. They get kicked out. Other families fight them. They create a kingdom again later on in the 19th century. That falls apart too. Finally, the kingdom that exists now is the third Saudi kingdom. And that gets started. War for the third Saudi kingdom starts in the early 1900s, but it doesn't get fully established until 1932. And
they've been at work a long time.
These families who clear tribes and clear families in this part of the world, and they go back a long time, mm-hmm. right? There's like a continuous line of families, and the families themselves are quite large.
Right, right.
We don't really have an equivalent for it mm-hmm. in our society. And this is one of the ways that I said it's like quite foreign. It requires you to think a little bit differently.
Well, I'm talking off the top of my head here, but like, you notice people in that part of the world have like 20 names.
Yes.
Like their names continue. Whereas here, I'm wondering if is it the same thing as like, to say this family from this province or whatever is like all people from Red Deer, Alberta.
Yeah.
Except they've been mixing and mingling and exchanging last names for so long that they're all part of the same family.
It's like both of those things. It's like there is a regionality to it sometimes, and then there is a family element to it. And those two things sometimes interact together. They sometimes interact separately.
Right.
There's also like marriage pluralism in this form of Islam. You're allowed to have up to four wives at any one time.
Uh-huh.
And also there's like marriage encouraged between first cousins. Like that's kind of like the ideal marriage partner to keep stuff kind of in the family and keep the family lines going.
Right.
So currently, if you're in the Saud family, you're part of the monarchy.
Sure.
But there's 15,000 people who are in the Saud family.
Yeah, yeah. What was that story that like 200 princes were kept in some hotel or something like that?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? It's like you're like, oh, it's a prince. We think of there being like two princes.
It's kind of like winning the lottery alongside 600 other people.
Thousands of princes. Exactly. Yeah. Well, so the guy who created the third Saudi kingdom, the one at the beginning of the 20th century, his name was Abdulaziz ibn Saud. Abdulaziz is like his first name. That's how people kind of call him familiarly. Mm-hmm. And he had 44 sons by 22 wives. And up until just...
My man!
And up until just a couple of years ago, the people who were ruling Saudi Arabia were his direct sons. Like mm-hmm. the sons of the guy who created the country were still ruling until right now. The guy who's in charge right now. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a bit. Anyway, Abdulaziz creates the new Saudi kingdom. He reconquers kind of the Arabian Peninsula and creates what's modern Saudi Arabia. And what's interesting, and this is a thing that's going to come into play like throughout history, is this religious conservatism, Wahhabism, this form of Islam, is actually kind of used as an equalizing thing in society. It becomes like the basis of the society because they say if you convert to Wahhabism and kind of live under these rules, it doesn't matter what tribe you're from, it doesn't matter what ethnicity you're from, you'll be considered like an equal access to the kind of state, to the state.
Sure.
Right. So it becomes the like basis of citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Is religion.
Is and this exact form of religion, mm-hmm. right? Because this form of religion doesn't recognize Shias as even Muslims or people.
Right.
Right? It doesn't recognize tons of practices in Islam that are common in other kinds of Islam, like praying at the tombs of saints.
Right.
Other forms of Islam will do that. They think it's like apostasy. They think it's like, heretical. And they violently act like fight against other Muslims sometimes who they think don't do Islam correctly.
Right, right. And this is a different, ISIS is a different form of Islam.
No, ISIS are Wahhabists.
Oh, they are Wahhabists as well.
Most of them are, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm presuming Saudi Arabia has shown a little bit of support for ISIS.
I mean... Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
okay,
like,
cool.
in so many words, absolutely. Yes.
Right.
Saudi Arabia supports ISIS in all kinds of crazy ways. Definitely financially.
Yeah, well, there always seems to be, I mean, yeah. Yeah, well, like, what was the thing with Osama bin Laden? He was hiding in Pakistan, but there was like a whole, you know.
He's Saudi. Osama bin Laden, the bin Laden family is one of the Saudi Arabian major families. And he was a Saudi.
Really?
He, yeah, they're Saudi people who were kind of exported
right
abroad.
Money.
Yeah, you were dead on.
And so all these countries, and again, there was a whole thing because when they were looking for him, they're like, he's hiding somewhere and Pakistan's hiding him. And,
right.
You know, and so all these countries feel, I know they're all different, but they feel
Let's roll back a bit and we'll work towards that link.
You dig.
As I was saying, the conservative kind of Islam becomes the kind of like common element in society and what kind of guarantees you citizenship. If you live by this conservative Islam where you have to wear a certain kind of outfit, which is that outfit that we're all familiar with like kind of red and white checkered headdress that's bound with like a wool cord at the top and the kind of like long robe. Basically, you're not allowed to wear anything that reveals the human shape.
Mm.
And then for women, they wear like a niqab and a veil for their eyes and stuff like that in public. And they have like a lot of extremely fastidious rules about men and women mixing in public or in private, especially like people who aren't in your family. A lot of it is family-based. Obviously, homosexuality is not permitted.
Right.
Atheism is not permitted. You know, there's rules about diet, rules about hygiene, rules about prayer, these kinds of things. Things that are, some of these things you find in all Islam, some of these things are very, very specific to Wahhabism. There's lots of rules. Anyway, the deal is that basically this is a kingdom. So like the family's in control of everything. And the way that like stuff happened in Saudi Arabia is there are like services. So there is like, you know, schools and, you know, garbage collection and sewers and stuff like that. And the family runs everything. So the family isn't just like the king and his people because it's so big. It's like all of the mid-level bureaucrats, all the politicians, it filters all the way down to like really low. Everyone's a family member or a prince or something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do anything, you generally just have to go ask a royal family member for money to do it or for that thing.
Right.
And sometimes it's like so mundane, like the way that you would go get a driver's license. So you go to Service Canada and get like wait in line and you get your driver's license form.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes in Saudi Arabia, the infrastructure is like pretty bad. So it's like you could wait 4 months to get your driver's license renewed, or you could just go ask, you wait in line all day. It's called supplicating. Mm. Like you're like literally like a supplicant to the monarchy. You just go to your nearest prince, whoever is nearby, knock on, wait. And then you're like, yo, can you like speed up this driver's license thing? And he can just write it for you right there.
Right.
So it creates this, and this goes all the way back to the 1930s when this kingdom was first started, where, Abdulaziz would like have huge feasts. He'd give food to anybody who came by. He'd have big open houses. He walked everywhere. He went everywhere with this huge chest of gold with him, and he'd give gold to everybody because he created a reputation for like, if you follow our rules, we'll give you, you know, we'll be generous with you. We'll give you everything we have, but then you're also super dependent on us. And for better or for worse, like that relationship has continued basically into the modern day. Like I said, back in the day, it was like, I'm hungry or I need a new coat. And they give you a coat. They give you clothes. They give you food. And now it's like, I need my fucking driver's license process. So you go to the prince and they help grease the wheel and get you your driver's license faster. So you don't have to wait.
We
make theater, we're actors. I wrote a grant to the government for a play. There's none of that in Saudi Arabia, but if you want it, and obviously there's no like plays, like that kind of performance.
I was going to say, are you taking it to Saudi Arabia?
No, definitely not. But say your basement flooded.
Sure.
Right. And you needed to pay to get it fixed. Like you'd go to the prince and ask for money to get it fixed.
Right.
And
not a common problem in Saudi Arabia, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's where you are, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
They actually had there was a massive scandal in 2009 and 2011 because there's like this one city that has this terrible sewer and it keeps flooding in like a hard storm. And they're supposed to have fixed it, but all the money keeps getting embezzled. And it's actually like a source of major civil unrest and a big, it's like a rallying point for dissent inside Saudi Arabia is like this flood, because like people died, like 150 people died in these floods, and the flood is tainted with sewage. So it's like disgusting and a terrible situation.
Now, the Saudi Arabia seems to, like, even though it's so different, mm-hmm. it seems to function more or less like a regular country in the world, right?
It is a functional country.
Yeah.
I mean, it is not a free society. Mm-hmm. Because then the flip side is the monarchy controls everything. Uh-huh. You're dependent on the monarchy for everything. And so they tolerate no dissent of the monarchy almost whatsoever. And the thing is, it's kind of at their whim, right? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes there are dissenting voices. Sometimes there is a bit of unrest, but then like sometimes, but everyone kind of exists at their whim. So if they get fed up with you, they just fire you or they murder you. Right. Like, generally more in the modern age, they do a little more firing or imprisoning than murdering, but obviously there's still a pretty healthy amount of murdering. Can I hear it, Jamie?
Woo! Buzzsaw! I fucking fucked it up!
Oh my god, I
Bonesaw!
I lobbed that one to you so gently.
I wasn't ready. I wasn't paying attention.
It's okay.
If I'm honest. Okay.
Anyway, so they don't tolerate any dissent, and they kind of control everything.
Right.
So there's always been a tension between like the really conservative religious people, because they encourage this conservative religious Islam, but they're not obviously all very devout believers, right? Like, they're in theory forbidden to drink, forbidden from extramarital sex, forbidden from having any intoxicants of any kind.
Sure.
And yet, like, they caught a Saudi prince, you know, like it's like the stereotype of from like a Hollywood movie or something. It's like, you know, they have yachts and, you know, crazy lavish lifestyles and like insane orgies. Right. And like they caught a dude smuggling 2 tons of amphetamines from Lebanon, a Saudi prince, 2 tons of amphetamines from Lebanon back to Riyadh.
Right.
Like, obviously they're doing all these things. It's a political tool for them. Like, and they use it quite well. And mm-hmm. obviously, some people are probably devout and some people probably aren't.
Yeah.
But the outward appearance of devoutness is like a major political tool for control. Mm-hmm. So then on one side you have super conservative religious people in the society who are getting more and more right wing all the time. And, you know, like, and these are the people who become terrorists, and these are the people who are like, photographs are against Islam, you know, right. like music is against Islam. And they essentially like, what's interesting about it is that it's not a unified voice. Like, once you kind of get inside what's normal there, there's actually, they have their own right wing and left wing.
Right.
There's people who are always trying to drag it farther right wing, like let people do less and less and less all the time. Mm-hmm. And then there's people who are like the voices of progress and the voices of tolerance and the like within that framework.
Sure. How's their internet access over in Saudi Arabia?
It's really quite good. And this has been a really interesting thing there too, because the internet's quite modern. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia has crazy demographics. 50% of Saudis are under the age of 25. Whoa. So it's had a population explosion. So they're young and they're now, because of the internet, getting pluralistic viewpoints on Islam. Now, what they're actually, because it's, again, not a free society, so if you...
It must be restricted in some way.
I don't think the internet is restricted the way the Chinese internet is restricted. Mm-hmm. I think it's just monitored. Oh, like, I don't think that things are actively blocked, but you can... But certainly, the internet is not a safe space.
Right.
Like, there's many Saudi gay activists or even just atheists who are anonymous on Twitter and who will kind of, like, post... you know, dissent, post opinion pieces that are critical on Twitter, and those people will get doxxed. Like, and usually they're full of kind of hateful replies from people, more mainstream Saudi people. And in their worst cases, their identities get revealed and they get punished, often by their own families, for whom, like, it's dishonorable to have someone who's super dishonorable to have someone who's queer in any way or to have an atheist in the family, and they'll get, like, you know, murdered or something by their own family, or they'll get imprisoned. You know, that happens definitely.
Hashtag Chechnya.
Yeah.
What, okay. So now I'm going to mosey along here with, you know, you say the Wahhabism is like, it's the same sect as ISIS. Mm-hmm. And Saudi Arabia has supported ISIS, you know, in some capacity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, they basically created ISIS by arming and supporting the remnants of the people in Iraq. Right?
So isn't it, like, an enormous, obvious black eye that, like, Donald Trump, of all people, is you know, sort of cowtailing to that.
Absolutely.
Like, because, you know, like, you know, it just feels incredibly ironic and obvious. You know what I mean?
100%.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, but like, you know this I mean? Is the thing, like,
yeah,
this is the central contradiction of our time. Saudi Arabia is like, got a terrible human rights record, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's a closed state.
That's pretty much all I hear about.
I mean, everything that we believe in about equality of gender and like freedom of expression, they have none of those values. And they assert those values certainly inside their country and on neighboring and other countries as well. Like they killed Jamal Khashoggi in Turkey, right? They have routinely used the armored cars that we, Canada, have sent them to like invade a neighbor, like Bahrain, and abduct people.
And but Turkey is a fairly... like liberal country, isn't it?
Well, Turkey, less so under their current president, Erdogan. Oh. But yes, they're not friends, Turkey and Saudi Arabia. They killed him at the Saudi embassy in Turkey.
Uh-huh.
And then part of the weird dynamic about this Khashoggi case, which we'll get into in a little bit, is that like President Erdogan clearly did a lot of surveillance on the actual killing itself. And while the Saudis were like lying about it all, gleefully leaked more and more info a little bit at a time to just keep it in the news cycle forever and make the Saudis fucking squirm.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's clearly part of what's going on with it.
I caught a little piece of him talking about how, you know.
Part of the reason it's been in the news for weeks is that, I mean, there's widespread... Why don't we just talk about this now?
Sure.
So for those who are not familiar with the story, a Washington Post journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, who is a Saudi citizen who had... lived his whole life as kind of like a media communications guy, first very close to the Saudi government.
And he's a U.S. citizen.
He is now.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah. He was trained, he was educated in the U.S. at university and then worked for the Saudis, like worked directly for the government sometimes. And then sometimes he worked for like critical newspapers. Like he kind of went in and out of favor, but he became more and more critical kind of as the years went on. And finally he fled to the U.S. fearing for his life in 2017 because he was too critical of the regime. Mm-hmm. He was a regular Washington Post columnist writing about Saudi Arabia, and he was in Turkey. He had to go to the Saudi embassy to get like a routine marriage document that said he had divorced his wife so that he could marry a new wife, and went to go pick it up and never came out of the embassy. And he was murdered in the embassy, and his body was cut up with a bone saw. Right. Maybe don't do it this time.
No, it's too close.
It seems he was murdered and dismembered. His body has not been found, but like the surveillance that the Turkish government has released suggests all of this and is quite damning. And the real story is that even though this was like, it was pretty obvious that they had killed him, the Saudi crown prince, who's like not the king, but who's effectively the ruler. The king is like fairly old at this point. His name's King Abdullah. And it's this guy's dad. The crown prince is like the guy who's actually in control of
everything.
What's
his name? DGA or something like that?
His name's Mohammed bin Salman, MBS.
MBS.
Yeah.
MBS.
MBS.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk about him later. But basically, he has just been like in a series of increasingly... He just lied about it. At first, he totally lied about it. He was like, no, it didn't happen. He walked out of there. It was fine. And then... the lies were so obvious that their story just kept changing and kept changing until finally they admitted they had killed him. Mm-hmm. And the kind of like theater of that is so crazy to us, right? It's like, how can they tell us? Like, they literally took his clothes and put them on a different guy and had that guy walk out. And then they showed the security footage and they were like, see, he walked out. It's cool.
Right.
And it's like, what the fuck do they think we think is going on?
Right.
And I always thought that this was such a weird thing about Saudi Arabia, where they like talk so much shit in that way, or they're like so dissembling.
Well, here's a question. Mm-hmm. Is that like, is that sort of brazenness because like, is the only reason we know about this because of President Erdogan? And like, you know what I mean? Like, and so, you know, maybe this kind of thing happens all the time and like this bare minimum amount of effort usually passes. But because this happened in this scenario with this guy who doesn't like the Saudis, you know, is that possible?
It's an outrage to journalists too. So journalists have been particularly diligent about covering it and creating exposure for it.
Yeah.
But I absolutely think that's true. In fact, I learned in my research that like cunningness and like being beguiling are like virtues in Saudi culture, or like they're like admired traits for a leader. And that goes all the way back to Abdulaziz. you know, the original founder of the current kingdom of Saudi Arabia, who was like, they're like tricky. Mm-hmm. And then they will lie to your face and then like turn around and kind of double cross you. And if the Saud family comes out on top, that's like a big win for everyone. And everyone high fives you and they're like, great work.
Right.
Like, you know, there's a story where a conservative imam came to Abdulaziz's palace or whatever.
An imam being?
Like a Muslim priest, okay. Like a religious leader. And these people are not, they're not considered like holy. They're just like guys who know a lot about Islam, who are the ones who kind of like tell other people what they should be doing. They make pronouncements on things. You know what I mean?
Guys or girls, Richard?
Yeah. No. Guy, no, it's definitely not true. No. Anyway, so like this imam came to visit the king and there was like, your robe's too long and your robe is supposed to be short because if it's too long, it's like ostentatious. It's like you're bragging about how great you are. Right. It's supposed to be short. You stay because it's like a humble thing.
Right. I got more fabric than I know what to do with.
Yeah. So it's like, and Abdulaziz was like, oh my God, you're so like, you're right. I understand. Here, like cut my robe, make it shorter. I'm so sorry. They cut his robe and the guy was like satisfied and then he left and then Abdulaziz was like, that guy never comes to the palace again. And then everyone like high-fived and laughed at him. You know what I mean? Like, right. That's kind of like,
right.
That's the guy who founded the country and whose legacy kind of endures, right? There's like if the fact that they'd be like, nah, he didn't come here. Like he didn't die in the embassy. He walked out.
Right.
If they'd gone away with it, they would have been like, ha ha, we did it. You know, like that's part of the ruling culture there.
Uh-huh. Now this is, I hope this is not too far a jump. I'm just, is that Saladin, is he sort of ancient Saudi Arabia?
Saladin.
He's the guy that like invaded Jerusalem.
I'm not familiar. I didn't go that far back. That's I only went good. To the 1700s.
That's all good.
It's cool.
Hey.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like reading about the contemporary, the contradictions of contemporary like Wahhabism, it's kind of fascinating the stuff that these religious guys have to do because like here, like as an anecdote, one imam had to make a pronouncement on if it was okay to bring a cell phone that has a copy of the Quran downloaded on it into a toilet. Like, because I don't think you're supposed to have a Quran in a toilet.
Right.
So it's like, can I have my cell phone if my cell phone has the Quran downloaded in a toilet? And the dude was super clever and was like, well, like in theory, the Quran's supposed to be in your brain and in your mind. So it's like downloaded into your brain and it's okay for your brain to be in the toilet.
That was exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, yeah. So he was like,
in your heart, man. It's in your heart.
So he's like, it's on your phone. It's cool.
Yeah.
But this is like the kind of thing where it's like they're trying to, literally, it's all about living the way that the prophet lived in the same style of dress, clipping your nails the way he lived, like doing your daily routine the way he did it. Mm. So it's like they're trying to glue this medieval way of living onto the modern times. It's like pretty nuts.
Yeah.
And nobody agrees, right? There's many different voices telling you to do different things.
They got different rules at this palace.
And there's so many, in fact, that now there's an official website from the Saudi government that's like, these are the official ones. You know, like these are the ones that we all believe in. But there's still voices that are like, no, you should do it like this. Oh my God, we went on this huge tangent. All of this is to say that Saudi Arabia, the Saud family, on a very tight balance, we'll let the country get more progressive to like satisfy the progressives, and then we'll take all those away and go more religious to satisfy the religious people on kind of like a yo-yo.
Right.
And like the thing is, because it's a monarchy, they can give rights and take them away very quickly. Like in the 70s, the rights of women were a lot better than they were.
Well, yeah, it probably speaks to why it's been the way it has been for such a long time. Because, like, politics swings, as we all know. And so if you are a monarchy, this antiquated—
They just let it swing.
Exactly.
And they swing it back.
And pull it back.
So, like, when the progressives start getting really, really antsy and popular, they give some concessions.
Yeah.
And then when the religious right starts getting really pissed about all the concessions, then they shut the door and they take it back. Right. So in the 70s, like women were allowed to be on TV.
Right.
They were starting to do there was lots more kind of gender mixing and lots of fraternization with the West.
Right.
And especially because this was when the oil money was booming for Saudi Arabia, when they started to become really rich.
Mm.
And then there was like horrifying Wahhabist terrorist attacks on Saudi Arabia, right? So, and the worst one was in 1979, a group of terrorists seized the kind of like most holy site in Mecca, which is in Saudi Arabia. Mecca's in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, the big cube.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that's, they see like hundreds of like fundamentalist Wahhabist terrorists took that over, killed people. It was like a weeks long siege to get them out. Eventually they had to ask like French soldiers to come and help. They had to ask the West for help to get rid of them.
Right.
And in the wake of that, Saudi Arabia went back and gave the conservative religious element a lot of power. And part of that involved giving these terrorists, more like militarized terrorist groups, a lot of money and sending them abroad to other places,
right,
which is how Osama bin Laden ended up in Afghanistan fighting against Russians on behalf of like the fundamentalist Islamic people there.
Right, right. Man. So it's kind of like being Facebook. Yeah, like you control the traffic. You know,
yes,
what I mean?
It is like that. And that's why it's so interesting. Like once you start to get your head around it, you're like, oh, I get it. The religion's just another thing that it's like a lever they're pulling,
yeah,
along with the rights and the progressiveness and along with the oil money, right? That's what keeps it all in check is,
yeah,
that like—
we hold the platform and, yeah, everyone else can sort of, you know, make the noise they need to make and we will adjust, yeah, accordingly as long as we control the platform.
Everyone has to come to us to do anything because, yeah, we have all the money and we'll give it to you. We will give you $10 million, you know, like that's fucking pocket change to us.
On the project you need to work.
And that in, and that in, and to answer your question about why nobody's like, Saudi Arabia funds ISIS. If you don't like ISIS, you know, it's, yeah, because that money trickles out to the West too. Like, right, Saudi Arabia donated $20 million to the Clinton Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Hillary and Bill Clinton's charity, which has as its planks, like, greater empowerment for women and like community engagement. Like there's no public groups allowed in Saudi Arabia except for religious groups.
Right.
You know? So it's like, does Saudi Arabia really believe in advancing the cause of women abroad? No. They're buying control and silence, right? They're saying, when you're in control of things, look the other way for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that in Canada as well.
Right. Is the Sultan of Brunei associated in this way?
The Sultan of Brunei is not.
They
have tension with him. Like they have differing opinions and philosophies.
Because he's another guy that sort of pops up in like every politician's, you know,
yeah,
history of photos and everyone's.
I think they have a similar like proxy relationship with the West, right, but Saudi Arabia and the Sultan of Brunei are not buds.
It's interesting. Just listening to myself not understanding the lines between like Arabic countries and, mm-hmm, and leaders and religions and stuff,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that is like such, is so telling, you know, like if, yeah, I think about it and I don't know, how many people don't think about it and don't know and,
yeah,
don't understand.
These things have definitely been deliberately kind of withheld.
Blurred. Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. Okay.
And so right now, yeah, Saudi Arabia is in a place of relaxing its restrictions. We have this new crown prince,
yeah,
Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, and he's young. He's the first leader of the country ever who hasn't been a son of Abdulaziz.
Uh-huh.
So he's the first grandson.
Right.
And he's 33. He's, ooh, really young.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, a couple years ago, used a U.S. consulting firm to create this huge new kind of bold economic plan for Saudi Arabia called Vision 2030, which is about diversifying its economy away from oil. As you know, being an Alberta boy,
sure,
when you have a single resource economy, you can feast or you can famine.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia has 1/5 of the world's oil. It has a shitload of oil.
Yeah.
But it, you know, someday that's going to run out.
Yeah.
They got to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
If they will successfully transition or not depends a lot on them, I guess. But so everyone, like, he kind of titillated the Western world when he first arrived. In a way, he's like the sexy Justin Trudeau of Saudi Arabia, right? Like,
yeah, that's the vibe I get.
Yeah, he's handing out rights. He's young and exciting. He could be the rule the country for 50 years. Like, you know, he's young.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also quite brutal. Obviously, like, this Khashoggi thing, it's clear that, you know, the playbook is not very different from how it used to be. He did a huge purge of family members who were considered to be like not loyal to him or corrupt, you know, like heavy quotation marks,
mm-hmm,
and kind of consolidated his own power when he was first appointed. And he's the one who started the war with Yemen, which we mentioned briefly earlier, where Yemen's a neighboring country that was kind of going under a civil war between competing factions. Saudi Arabia decided to back one of the factions, but essentially all they've done is murder tons of people and not really resolve anything.
Right.
And they've done some of the most inhumane things that you could fucking possibly imagine, like
chemical weapons and stuff.
I think they been accused of using chemical weapons. I don't know if anything's been proven. Right. But like something that absolutely happened was they did a triple tap airstrike where they did an airstrike, killed a bunch of civilians. Then when the people came to help those civilians, they airstriked it again, just like in the Hunger Games, but actually in real life.
Sure.
But then unlike in the Hunger Games, they actually went one step farther and also airstriked the funerals of all of those people. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so crazy.
It's fucking wild.
Yeah.
It's so brutal and inhumane. And Yemen is like a totally destroyed country at this point. It is like, you know, it has no services, has no government. People are just being massacred and held in poverty. And
right.
And that's like Saudi Arabia's fault. And literally today, the Canadian foreign minister tweeted that that Saudi Arabia has to stop its atrocities in Yemen.
Right. Now, what? Who has power over Saudi Arabia? Like, who does anyone in the world have sway? Because that seems to be like the theme in all the movies I see is that like the Saudis are the wild card, man. Yeah. There's no control in the Saudis. You know what I mean? They seem to be their own isolated unit. Does anyone like my brain goes to like old Vlad. You know, does he have a pull with the Saudis or is you know?
The key to emancipating the world from Saudi influence is to get off oil.
Right.
Once we're off oil, we don't need them anymore.
Right.
I mean, they still have a fuckload of money, like liquid money,
sure,
that they pump into everything to make sure everyone's kind of on the hook for them. And in that way, in the last episode that we did about Brazil, I talked about how Brazil's political system has just a lot of corruption built into it. Like, you cannot take power probably almost anywhere in the world without getting in dirty with the Saudis. That's literally how they've lasted this long, I think.
Right.
You know, like, Canada can talk a big game, and Canada and the Saudis have been fucking bitching at each other for 6 months now.
Right.
Right? But Canada has yet to actually cancel its arms deal with Saudi Arabia. It has yet to actually do anything very substantive to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
People have been calling for the end of this deal the whole time.
Yeah.
But
which way does the deal go?
We sell them
military stuff.
Yeah, we sell them light armored vehicles in exchange for $5 billion.
Right. okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So I think that in that way, you know, it's another reason to end oil dependency is because like when we become free of oil and the world becomes free of oil, the Saudis will have a lot less power.
Right.
Like Canada only imports a little bit of Saudi oil, like 10% of our oil imports are Saudi.
Isn't it a bit funny that we import oil?
Canada's weird though with our oil because
we sell most of our oil.
Yeah, that's right. We don't refine it in Canada. So
right.
we mine the crude oil out of the tar sands. Western Canada apparently is oil self-sufficient, but we export so much of it that we are a net oil importer because
right.
we have to import oil, which most of it we get from the US.
But some of it we get from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, the government of Canada literally has a page about this where they claim that our Saudi oil dependency is like negligible and could easily be replaced by something else.
Then why isn't it?
That's a fucking great question. Maybe that's something that the Canadian government could stop doing.
Every time someone says something like that, I just feel like, okay, so what? You're admitting that it's a problem that we are dependent? So why are we at all if we could just change it?
Exactly.
Okay, well, great.
Yeah. So we've talked about, is there anything else? I don't know. Is there anything else popping up in your mind right now?
I don't think so. I mean, I knew that there, you know, it was a big old monarchy and that there were, I didn't realize there were so many princes and I didn't fully understand like where it all started in that sort of.
It's hard to overstate the amount of influence that they have over the world. Like they are fundamentally outside the laws of all societies.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who was caught trafficking 2 tons of pills through Beirut was let go.
Right.
There was another Saudi prince who was living in Los Angeles who was like held 4 of his maids hostage and tried to rape them and they all like the cops came and it was very public. I think that dude, there was not enough evidence to prosecute that guy.
Sure.
He was let go. Like they've bought a lot of people and they've bought a lot of autonomy with it and a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The world is different all over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to imagine a different reality than your own, I think. And that's what makes it so easy. We talked about this a little bit with the Brazilian thing last time. And that's what makes it so easy not to think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to, yeah.
It, learning about Saudi Arabia was truly, you truly have to get in a different headspace about like how society functions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really closed and repressed. The public performance of being a devout Wahhabist who's in line with everything is really important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I think, rarely relax and like let their true feelings out. We really take that for granted, how much we are allowed to do that in our society. That's a value our society has that theirs doesn't have.
Right.
And I think many people in Saudi Arabia wish for that freedom. What's interesting is that, you know, there were so many monarchies back in the day before there were democratic republics like there are now. And this was like the central longing for autonomy that people wanted. And that's a human element, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's not natural for people to just submit to authority.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the instinct to submit to authority exists in a balance with an instinct for self-gratification and self-actualization with people.
Mm-hmm.
There's comfort in submitting to authority, and I think that we like to have a tribe and we like to have a group, but then there's also a desire for individual expression. And that desire still exists among the people of Saudi Arabia. They just have to be very careful with how they pursue it. And there's many people who are, you know, really trying to bring freedom right. to those people.
What is, I know you mentioned Osama bin Laden was sent to Afghanistan to fight Russia. Is that the relationship Saudi Arabia has with Russia? Is that there
yeah,
is
so,
a negative
I one? Mean, like on a like very rough geopolitical crayon terms, like Russia is a historical ally and supporter of Iran. And uh-huh. Iran is the other kind of like major power on the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
And Iran is a predominantly Shia country, and Saudi Arabia, Wahhabism is a Sunni philosophy. Obviously, they do not have room for Shiites sure. in their society, and it's like they're very persecuted and very maligned.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where that historical antagonism has come from. Yeah.
Right, right. Interesting. Oh, man. World's big, man.
Yeah.
World's big, and it's crazy.
And yet, like, everywhere you go, like, societies face similar issues and deal with similar things. This is just a different way of structuring a society, and you know, pretty dark and repressive one.
Yeah.
But it actually, it made sense. It makes sense once you get into it. It's all about this family controlling everything.
I didn't realize that it was like the Saud family, and they named it
yeah.
after them.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I assumed that like Saudi was some sect of Islam. That's so interesting.
Yeah. So
okay.
Keep an eye out for Kavanaugh, Alberta. Coming yeah. to
keep it safe.
That's right.
Guys, this has been another episode of Explain It to Jamie. If you have any topics that you want explained, please feel free to throw us a message. We've been getting so many messages lately about topics. It's like it fills my heart. It's so awesome. And we are reading them, and we are considering them, and we are noting all of them. So if you have anything you want us to cover, please send it in. We have a Facebook, we got Twitter, we got Instagram, we got SoundCloud and iTunes. We have a YouTube account, so you can if you that's how you ingest your podcast, you can check us out on that.
Mm-hmm.
And brand spanking new, we got a Patreon account. Which is a website that you can use to give us money.
Yeah, if you really like the show and you want to support us, like chipping us a couple of bucks a month really makes a difference for us. You know, we pay for hosting, we pay for, you know, we spend our time on creating the graphics, editing the podcast, doing the research. It does take it is kind of like a part-time job for both of us.
Yeah.
And supporting us with anything that you can would mean the world to us. There's all kinds of like perks for different levels of subscription. So what's the Patreon? It's just Explain It to Jamie.
Just Explain It to Jamie on Patreon. Yeah, yeah. It should be up by the time this podcast goes out. So.
Take a look and we'd really appreciate your support. It would mean the world.
Yeah, and of course, if you can't afford to donate money, you can help us out. It helps so much if you subscribe, like, share
it around.
Go on our iTunes and give us a rating and a review. That's like mega.
Yeah.
And otherwise, just keep listening.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And it's been Explain It to Jamie.
Woo! Bonesaw!
Bonesaw!